Welcome to another episode of the Self-Approved Podcast. It's your boy, Official Rico, and on this week's podcast, we're going to be talking about being unapologetically yourself. We have a special guest, but you'll hear more about that when we get into the conversation. So, let's do it. It's your boy, Official Rico, and
J.O. Stacks,
and
Kayla Cat.
Kayla Cat. Kayla Cat is one of our close friends. She is a ghostwriter. She's just an amazing and funny freaking human. You'll get what I'm talking about once we get further into the episode. But for now, please tell us about yourself.
There is not much to say about me. I am from Missouri, and it is as horrible as it sounds.
You said that it was great.
It is great. It's a nice place to grow up, but I don't think it's a great place to branch out. So now I live in Los Angeles. I love to write, and I will say anything.
That's very true. We know that.
We definitely know that.
So tell us more about your writing, what you've worked on in the past, what you're going to specialize in. Because you're talking about your book you're working on now before this podcast. I'm very intrigued. So what other
please tell us more
writing have you done?
I am such a heterosexual male. I want to know more about this book.
Well, as I said before, I am a ghostwriter. So I've never, ever, ever wanted to be famous. I value my privacy like a lot. So I would write for people who just needed something. I started off actually writing poetry, like when I was in high school, for people who wanted something for their girlfriend. I started writing poems for weddings, and it just got bigger and bigger. I never did any kind of like plagiarism writing, but I did write for people if they just needed like a speech or something where they feel like they couldn't put their words together. But right now, I'm currently working on a series of children's books on tough topics and some side projects about the gay and lesbian community. I'm trying to explore some new area that people haven't touched on quite as bit or quite as much.
And just for the record, I will volunteer as the critique for your lesbian book. I'm very intrigued. Said what I've heard so far, the synopsis has been terrific. If you ever need a guinea pig, I'm your boy.
Well, I don't want it to be like a lesbian book. I'm actually trying to get away from it being like a lesbian book. It is a story about love and marriage, and it just happens to be two women who are the main characters of it. It's going to be, you know, love and mystery and drama, sex, of course, because that is a vital part of marriage. At the very core of it, it is really about two people who just love each other, and they want to be seen to the world as just that, not just two women doing something nasty.
So yeah, previous to this podcast, we were talking about it, and you said you came to the conclusion because you haven't seen that much writing regarding lesbian couples, and that's the reason you're kind of tackling on this book. Is that right? Or
pretty much. When I sat down to write something new, I was trying to think of areas that weren't explored as much. And when I think about lesbians, I have a friend who recently came out as a lesbian, and I felt like she probably took as long to come out because she didn't want to be stereotyped. So I really wanted to explore what it's like, a real lesbian relationship is like, not just what we see on TV or when it's overly sexualized for other people's pleasure.
I would have to speak on that part and say I think the community, any community, needs that, because as I mentioned previously before we started, which is when people hear of lesbian couples, they think of bust haircuts with several thousands of cats. And that's all we know. We don't know. That's all we choose to know. I'm sure we know more. That's what's publicized. That's what people are known for. When you see a lesbian couple, you see them with men clothes on and then a buzz cut, and you're like, is that a dude or a woman? And that's it. I don't know anything about lesbian couples.
Well, for me, I just felt like I've seen people who are genuinely in love, and no disrespect to gay males, but I feel like they have been getting a like lion's share of the attention as far as like being oppressed and whatnot. There's a lot of lesbian rapes that occur, you know, with people trying to like use it as like conversion therapy in a way. You know,
but that makes sense,
right? It's like, you know, you're lesbian because you just never had a man before, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
When I feel like a lot of people think that only happens to like gay men when they get bashed like that, but it actually happens to women a lot.
Right.
And women are shunned from their parents, just like men are when they come out of the closet or anything like that. So I don't know. Honestly, I just sat down in my desk in my home to write, and it took off from there. It was something I got really interested in. I started interviewing some of the lesbians that I personally knew, and I was really surprised by how many times they have been basically, you know, feeling oppressed by people who are closest to them. So I just decided to give that community a more of a voice.
So you mentioned that lesbians are some get raped. Mm-hmm. It's very true that when the LGBT community comes up, you don't think about the lesbians. Mm-hmm. Even though that's the first letter of the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think about them. You go, like you said, straight to the gay men, and all of the other letters kind of disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, they've also been oppressed. They also get shunned. And I think it is really definitely important to, even being inside of the community, to understand what happens with the ladies as well.
I mean, I feel like some people would say, like, gay women have it easier. But just like men are, in a sense, forced to be masculine all the time, women get that same thing. Like, why don't you put on some earrings? Or why don't you wear this? Or why do you do, like, why are you too pretty to be a lesbian? Like, you don't understand how hurtful that is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, only ugly women or people you consider to be unattractive should go to the other side.
Right. And, you know, that isn't acceptable at all. And even within the community, you mentioned, like, them being forced to kiss because they're lesbians and because guys get turned on by that.
Mm-hmm.
Though guys do get turned on by it, I don't think it's appropriate and will not ever think it's appropriate for ladies to be forced to become a sexual object to get a guy off.
I feel like they've become more of, like, entertainment for people as opposed to just, like, a legitimate, you know, sexuality. Like, these women love each other because they love each other, and they're not here for us to turn you on or be sexy for you.
And I definitely agree. So with all that being said, I definitely support that this book needs to happen. And
it's coming along. It really is. And I'm, like, sometimes when I'm working on it, when you realize how important what you're doing is to the movement that needs to happen, it kind of motivates you more. So sometimes I get tired of it. Not get tired of writing it, but just, you know, get, like most writers, writer's block, or you get discouraged sometimes because you feel like you're not getting the message across. But just the fact that I know it will open some people's eyes, it's like I'm really enjoying working on it.
Right. And even as a writer, like you said, getting writer's block, I definitely have experienced that. But also, have you ever gotten to that point where you literally have, like, a storm or, like, a tornado of ideas that you need to, like, get down on the paper, but you can't seem to type fast enough?
Right. And I start everything off with either a free write session where I'm just, you know, misspelling words and the organization is everywhere, or disorganization rather. Or I start off as a recording where I'm just like slurring words out of my mouth, because I do have those moments where I feel like I can't get it down fast enough. So I think it's really important to just get it all out there first, and then you can go back and proofread and edit and all that good stuff. So it happens, and it happens often.
I've definitely had those moments where I would be out running and a bunch of thoughts come flowing in, and the way that I want to word this or the way that this should sound comes to my head, and I'm like, gosh, I'm nowhere close to a pen or the computer and I can't write it down like this, but it sounds so good. And then when you get there and you're trying to think of what you thought of before, you're just like, jeesh, kind of effed that one up.
I always encourage people when they have a thought to just get it down anyway, somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And people always think that they have to word things a certain way, but that's the beauty of being a writer. Everybody has a different voice. If you tell your story the same way I tell my story, why would I buy your book? They can just buy my book. It's different. So if you have a way of saying things where you just feel like it won't come across right, it might come across perfect to a certain person.
I guess that's, in a sense, a re-quote or a different way of saying another man's trash is another man's treasure, or something like that.
One man's treasure.
I don't really like that saying, because
one man's trash is another man's treasure.
It means one person is whatever that person doing might be trash. But I think what you mean is, like, one person's misunderstanding of a certain thing could just be another person's, like, catalyst for something great.
Didn't think of it that way. That makes a lot of sense. But that is true. When you say another man's trash is another man's treasure, you're definitely calling that person trash or garbage.
Idea of trash.
You
just might not be ready for it. You might have an idea that you can't bring to life, and then you give it to me, and then I'll put it down, and you'll say, you know what? That's what I meant to say. I just couldn't quite get it right. Kind of thing.
Or comprehensible, and I'm sure you go through that all the time with you being a ghostwriter. Do people ever, it's like, I have this idea, I'm trying to do this,
I think why there is a market for ghostwriters, because some people just don't have a way with words. They can't put it down, they can't quite get it. And like I said, I started off writing poems for people in school. Like, I have this girl that I like, and I'm like, well, you know, tell me about her. And I can make something sound really good, and they're just like, and now she knows how I feel. And not because I was like a coward or I wasn't smart enough to write it, but because I just gave it to someone who knew what to do with it. So that's pretty much the whole market for it. So I think people look down on ghostwriting, like we're just person in the back and we're just giving this other person credit, or this person is, you know, not smart enough to do something, when it's really just they can't handle the idea or the concept, and they're just giving it to someone else who can nurture it into what it needs to be. So I love what I do.
That's good.
And even with the topic or the title,
I was actually just going to bring that in. So.
Of this episode with being unapologetically you. Well, yeah, that was the beginning. But we were talking about that before we started the episode, which tied into the episode. But speaking about being unapologetically yourself, how do you do that through your writing? Because, like you said, you're a ghostwriter. You write this stuff for other people. But how do you still speak truth, and or how do you get what you want to say out? Maybe, let's use an example. I'm kind of good at metaphors, better than I am at, like, getting the actual word out. But say I'm, like, your cousin or something. And I know that you write, and I knew that you write this. But, like, I read it, and then I'm like, oh, Michelle wrote this. Or then I read something you wrote and I'm like, wait, but did she write this? How can I identify yourself, what you do through what you write?
Honestly,
that's a lot of words, but
it
do you
is,
get it?
But, I mean, the whole point of ghostwriting is not for me to shine through. Like I said before, I don't want to be famous at all. It's not something that I crave. A lot of people need it, or a lot of people feel like they need to put their name on everything they do. But my job is to make it come alive for you. My own personal writing, I'm definitely... Okay, so for my writing, I just make sure that I always write it with my readers in mind. But I also make sure that it's my own style. My father said, if you're going to do something stupid, make sure it's your idea. And it sounds kind of crazy when it comes to writing, but if I ever want to take a crazy risk or do something a little crazy, or I think people might not understand, I always just go for it. So I guess that would be answer to your question. I don't write with other people in mind, like what people are going to think, as opposed to, like, I write saying, is this going to tell my story the best way that it possibly can, so that it comes through what I'm trying to say, and a person totally gets it, if that makes any sense.
Through a bunch of words that I said, you definitely answered my question. You got the point that I was
just
trying to make.
Sure that I got it there.
So do this. Tell us the process of the moment that you get picked up by a client to, like, the ending of that. What is that like?
Basically, I use different platforms to just advertise my skills and, like, my resume. And people will present you with a job, and then you guys discuss the details about the word count and exactly what you want, maybe who it's for or the occasion that it's for. I will take it back to my home or my desk or my laptop, and I would just try to make it come alive with all the rules and expectations that person has given me. I present it to them if it's something they feel acceptable, and then we exchange payment details and all that good stuff. So it's actually a quite simple process, but it makes you feel pretty good when people put that kind of trust in you, because it's not just for, like, a school paper. This is, like, somebody's wedding. This could be an acceptance speech of some sort, like something that really means a lot to a person.
I think it's awesome that you are here for this episode, because, as you said earlier, you're not here for the fame. So being a ghostwriter, you said, that kind of has a bad name to it in some retrospects, because you don't get the, you know, the highlight or the fame as the people who actually execute it. But I think that allows you to be unapologetically yourself. Right. Because you don't have to worry about conforming to any standards or, you know, as an artist, when you're in the limelight, there's a standard of what you need to do.
Right.
So you can just be authentic to your writing and then give it off to the client, and then they can deal with...
Right, and they can do with it whatever they choose. I thought for a long time that I wanted to be this famous writer. I wanted my name, I wanted my picture on the back of the book, you know, how you have the case and everything.
Right.
But I just found myself very comfortable just making... Like, I never wanted to be that person who had an image to maintain.
Right.
I just wanted to be me. And I think that is one of the ways that I stay unapologetically myself. I don't have to do anything anyone says I need to do. I don't have to work for anybody else. I just get to do me. And if you want what I have to offer, you can, you know where to come get it. But if you don't, then that's fine too. So I enjoy that part of it. And I think I will enjoy that for the rest of my life. But who knows?
Yeah. Or you'll blow up and you'll be a famous ghostwriter that... They know your work, but they won't know
right. your name.
I just want it to... I want to take that ugly face off of ghostwriting, because it's just like... Think about it as like a party planner. Mm-hmm. Or someone who throws a baby shower, or any kind of anniversary party, anything like that. These people said, this is what I want. These are the colors. This is a theme that I want. I'm putting it in the hands of a professional. But when you go to the baby shower, you don't say, these people did you a great job. They'll say, she put on a great baby shower. Like, yeah. I had a good time. They don't like say... They take that credit away from you because you paid for it. Because I feel like if you know your strengths and that's not one of them, and you put it in the hands of a professional, that actually makes you stronger, because you can recognize what your strengths are. And next time you might write it yourself. But the next time you might outsource it again. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So I think people should take that shame off ghostwriting. It's a beautiful thing. It's just opening up another world. You're letting someone else in to help you make whatever you got to do better.
For sure, and I come from a hip-hop background. I work with a lot of hip-hop artists, and especially in hip-hop, ghostwriting is frowned upon. And you get shunned if you have any ghostwriters with you, because it's like, oh, if you don't write it yourself, you're basically...
trash.
Exactly.
Right.
But if you look at all these professionals, like these big, like Eminem, Dr. Dre, if you look at their the credits of their albums, there's ghostwriters on every single track. Because, again, these are professionals. They bring in, some secondary... views and thoughts on it, and they get crazy masterpieces out of it. But if you do it all yourself, you don't play into your weaknesses or strengths, that's when you get trash products.
Right. And one of the biggest things about building any kind of empire for yourself is a great team. And
exactly,
that team,
yes.
Like even the president has somebody who writes his speeches. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that doesn't mean that any of the things that are said are not his own ideas, not his own policies, or not his own views on it. He just had someone put it into words where the people could receive it a little bit better.
But also speaking into that, because I think just previously, maybe today or yesterday, I was having this conversation with someone about there is somebody pushing the president to say these things, or pushing or giving him these laws to pass, or there is somebody in their ear. We've seen it before where we know that politicians have writers. Of course they do. Mm-hmm. And then you see where sometimes, I won't mention any names, but some politicians steal other people's speeches.
Right.
I was going to make a point, but I don't remember.
Everybody's influenced by somebody.
I was gonna say
that's where I was going. You're a writer.
On that note, have you ever considered getting into politics when it comes to writing? Is that kind of a long-term view, or is it just kind of just stay in your lane for the
most part? Honestly, politics have never appealed to me in any way, shape, or form, like at all.
Writing for
it really hasn't. But I feel like if you think about it like this, the president, even though he might have someone who writes these things, he is the one that is stepping up to say those things. Mm-hmm. So this person is taking someone else's words if they need to, and they're putting it out into the world, but they're also going to be the one that receives all that backlash.
Right. I mean, it's very prevalent today.
Right. It's not like you're taking someone else's words and then they take all the credit and the backlash. You're using someone else's words if you need to, but you're also putting yourself out there for the ridicule that comes from those words. I mean, we all need a sense of discernment. If mm-hmm. the speech isn't good, maybe you shouldn't use it. You know, that's anything. Like, someone could commission me for some work, and they could say, well, this is not what I was looking for. This is not what I want. I mean, you know what I mean? So it's not like someone's forcing him to say those things. I mean, he might be influenced by anybody. We're all influenced by something or right. someone. But I don't think that it takes away that person's choice to decide whether they want to use an outside source to help them with whatever they're doing. But for politics, for me, I'm pretty sure that'll be a no forever.
So you've never thought about, though, like, hearing them say something. You're like, I could have wrote that. Like, you know a person's words from what somebody else has written.
That happens to me with, like, movies. It may be a stage play, but never politics. Because I don't really engage in it. I really don't.
Okay, so tell us about, like, the movies, then. I'm sure, because even as an actor, I sit there and I watch a show or movie, and I'm like, that was trash writing. I could have done better.
Now, for me, I can't stand when dialogue is just flat.
What do you mean?
When all the characters sound exactly the same. I mean, there's a reason why these characters have different faces and different names and different clothes. And you do all that, and then you give them the exact same, like, dialogue. We all talk the same way. We all say things in the same tone. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff that I'm like, we should have spiced that up a little bit more. We could have brought that down a little bit more. We could have played that a little bit better. But one of my favorite movies, dialogue-wise, is... And I think it was actually a play, too. You've Got Mail?
Never heard of it.
With Meg Ryan and
I mean, Tom I've Hanks. Heard the, You've Got Mail, but I've never heard the, like, movie.
It's one of the most beautifully written movies ever. It's so intelligent. The language is so sexy. And it's just a movie about two people who have fallen in love over email. They don't know each other, but they do know each other. You know, that whole thing. They just don't know who they are. I think everybody should watch it, and I think... Even if you don't fall in love with the story, you will fall in love with just the way that they present it. It's just, you can tell good writing from bad writing, and that's one of my favorite examples.
So talking about dialogue falling flat, could you give us an example of what you mean by that?
I mean, like, if you have two people who are in love with each other, and you have this girl getting ready to walk out on this guy, and he's like, why would you leave? I love you. And then she's just like, oh my goodness, I love you too. And then it's just like a happy ending. Well, you could make it more explosive. These are two people who are passionate about each other. There should be some yelling. There should be some screaming. There should be maybe some crying or some begging. Like, you should make the audience lean in all the time. If they're not leaning in, then something's wrong.
It's kind of like, basically, this might be a really over-exaggerate kind of example, but kind of choking the audience to hold their breath.
Yes, right.
If that makes sense.
I am looking to dabble in stage writing. I think it is really interesting. I would love to see something that I wrote come to life. And I intend to choke the audience all night long.
I mean, because you said you want it to be explosive dialogue, and that's kind of the only way that I can think of. When you watch these movies and you hear them say something, and then you're like, right. And then you can't really breathe until this next thing happened, or you hear them say it back, or you're like, damn, I was rooting for her.
Well, I'm just being honest, life is boring. Most of our day-to-day life is boring. So if I go and watch something, read something, it needs to be something that's not just my normal life. Of course, it has to have normal life aspects in it, but if I'm reading something and it sounds like what I did yesterday, something's off. Something's completely wrong.
Does that not make it relatable?
It makes it relatable, but I don't watch movies to relate. I mean, you do, and as I say, you have to have some kind of real life aspects to it, but you should be entertained, and that is even with writing. So, as a ghostwriter, I'm constantly trying to figure out ways to make every piece of work I do a little bit different, which would just make it all that more harder to pinpoint my work, which is the point.
I mean, that it all makes sense. I don't know if you've ever heard the saying white writer versus a movie writer or any other type of writer, I should say. I've heard this saying in, like, writing a scene mm-hmm. where... You can tell that this person wasn't trying to relate to any audience at all. So saying, like, hello, sir, how are you? Versus somebody coming in the room is like, hey, what's up? Have you ever heard of that? Or
I don't think I've heard of those in those terms, but I get what it's about. Like, being able to relate to the characters is obviously a very important part of any production, any writing you do. But I feel like people are, when they come to see something, they are looking to be related to, but also they want to be taken out of their normal element. It needs to be something that is not an everyday piece of kind of work.
Maybe Aladdin?
Perhaps.
I don't know, because you said they want to be taken out of their daily, but also have relatable things.
Right, relatable characters.
One of the relatable things about Aladdin was he basically had to steal to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
There's people out there that have to steal to make ends meet, but they're also in a fantasy world where there's this great ending to it.
Right. It's like a perfect example, because it's something, you take something that pulls you in. Like, I've had to do that too. I've been down on my luck as well. But then it also transcends you into something that wouldn't normally happen in your regular everyday life. And it makes it more engaging.
Right. And kind of gives you hope.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So everything doesn't need to be boom, boom, pow all the time, because that's not anything we can all relate to. But it does need to give you a little bit of something. And I try to add that in everything that I do, because that's pretty much the point.
I always do something like this. They never know what I'm going to do. I always have something up my sleeve. So with you hear that baby too, right? Yeah. Okay. I was like, is it just me?
I think a dog stole
you hear a dog you hear and a baby.
I think he stole my baby.
You hear a dog and a baby at the same time? I don't know. That just...
Like on Family Guy? Dingo and the baby.
So the last thing before we wrap up the conversation part and move on to the other segments, do us a favor. Pitch us a book.
Pitch you a book?
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed lately that I'm really into, like, horror stories and murder and whatnot.
Go for it.
How about a book with these two people who meet in a hospital as children? One of them is there for some life-altering surgery. And the other is there for, like, let's say, a broken leg. They meet and they have this really great chemistry. I mean, these are just kids. And in their own way, they're kind of comforting each other about what's going on with the other one. And the book breaks up into, like, this person's life and this person's life. And they're going through their own struggles with, let's say, like, racism and maybe even, like, a little bit of colorism. You know, those are two different things. Let's say you put it back maybe in the 50s or something. Just two people who had no business meeting each other, but they met each other at the most vulnerable part in their lives. And we break it off to tell their stories separately. And at some point in this book, they do meet up again and they face these issues together. But they're adults and they're stronger now. I think that's a good jumping off point for a book. Would you be interested in hearing the ending?
My question is there any lesbian sex in it?
You know what? This is a 50s, so this could be... I mean, let's say they are women. Let's make them both women, and we can even add a little bit of conflict with that element where they're not supposed to be having sex because, hey, it's the 50s, and you just don't do that. So, yeah, why not?
Okay.
Let's make it some lesbian weird... Right, let's make it some lesbian sex... With some big dresses from the 50s.
There we go.
Some I Love Lucy-ness.
Done.
would I buy that?
Was it the 50s?
I would be interested in hearing the ending.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to play Mark Cuban here.
Okay. He's cute.
So, doesn't that movie sound like The Fault in Our Stars? Or a recent movie that just came out, 5 Feet Apart?
Mm-hmm. No.
Though they weren't little kids. It kind of begins at the same element.
Actually, I don't think so. These people are not terminally ill, and there is literally nothing keeping them apart, but they are apart.
But you did say life-altering.
One of them was having a surgery. Maybe that was life-altering. And they met, and you know how you're having something big happen in your life, and your parents and your friends say, you're going to be fine, you're going to be fine, you're going to be fine. But you don't really feel that fine unless you hear from somebody who you don't even know, like maybe a psychiatrist or something. You know,
my
mean?
Question is, all jokes aside, would this be a love story, or would this be like platonic friends that meet each other?
You know what? I think platonic friends can be just as powerful as a love story. I think people actually take the love story as an escape. It's just more easy to fall into, you know, right? Awkward kiss.
Right, the easier
two.
Way out, yeah.
But platonic friends probably have way more conflict than boyfriend and girlfriend.
And something we call that maybe for other people out there that's like, don't nobody want to see platonic friends at the end. They want to see them make out and have sex and get married. But I think in the movie industry, we call that a fuck you ending.
Pretty much. much, right?
Which is like, oh, I thought they were going to get together, but they're just friends. I think I'm going to buy this book, and I will invest in it as well.
I feel like people's goals, especially when it comes to writing nowadays, it should be the a complete alternative. Like, it should be something you wouldn't even think of, because if you can think of it, then it's probably already been done. So you need to take your mind to, like, level 13 and get away from that happy, sappy ending. I mean, these, one of these people could, like, die.
True.
In the book. And you're thinking, oh, this book is going good, and you might know this part, well, this person's over here, this person lives over here. You know, you do something kind of cool, like she was on 12th Street, she was on 11th Street, and make them constantly cross paths or something. And then you think, oh, they're going to get together. They're going to eventually meet up at that one coffee shop they're always going to, and they always miss each other, but then one of them dies, and she got hit by a car. Like...
Actually, I would love to see that.
The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. Yeah.
I've never seen it, no.
Oh, it's really... It's kind of similar to that, so... The one kid, his dad is like a Nazi officer.
Ooh.
And then the other, the kid in the striped pajamas, is actually in a concentration camp. And then he meets them through like the fence, and then they become really good friends, but he doesn't understand what's going on because obviously they're just kids. And then,
it kind of sounds familiar. Yeah.
I was kind of watching that the other day, but then I stopped.
As I'm saying, I would, if I wrote something, I think that the conflict in the story would just need to be just interesting. Mm-hmm. And even with the lesbian love story we were talking about earlier, and I like calling it a love story because it's a story. One of the directions I was thinking of going when I first started was, because one of the main characters is a caterer, or she's an event planner. She had a falling out, or more like a misunderstanding at the last minute, one of her caterers. In their misunderstanding, there is like some sexual tension. And I almost took like the, I call maybe the cheap route of like, okay, I could just make her cheat on her wife with this guy.
Right,
they're 7 years in, get the 7 year itch, you got the 7 year, maybe I want something different, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I kind of forced myself to go away from that because that was just kind of playing into the same old thing, almost like, okay, well, she's with a woman and she's in love, but then, you know, she just got swept off her feet by some man. So, I mean, we could still go that direction and still be interesting, and it's definitely conflict, but I wanted to take it somewhere else, so who knows how it's going to end. I still don't know.
I like it.
I mean,
I think we're in.
That makes the best writer right there. A writer that doesn't know the ending.
Well, people will say you should definitely have an outline before you start, but I actually find it's more fun if you don't.
I agree to that. I don't have an ending to... I mean, my book is not really a storyline. It's more of like a self-help meet memoir type book.
Okay.
But I don't... I rather have that person's book that did not know what the ending was going to be until they got to the end.
Right, give me 5 endings and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Right, let's compare. Let's see which one fits better. Let's see how many you can guess.
So you guys invest in my book?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we definitely invest in it. But like, I wouldn't want to watch a movie where I can guess the ending as soon as it starts.
Exactly, and I find myself doing that a lot. And people think that I am cynical or pessimistic, but that's why I think I get aggravated so easily, and I'm like, turn this off. I can't watch this because I know what it's going to be. We all know what's going to happen. You know, like, give me something that I'm just like, what? What was that? Like, and then what happened? And I think that's what's drawing me to horror, because that's one of the things for the most part, with a horror movie. You don't really know how they're going to die or when they're going to die. I think that's why I'm drawn to it, because it's more creative than your average movie.
I'm going to use what I'm about to say and segue into our next segment. But don't you just don't like people that spoil crap on Twitter?
No, I don't. I'm not really big on Twitter, but I get it. They are sucky.
Right? Like, they were born assholes. Speaking of Twitter, I think it might be time to Twitter me this.
With Spotify, it's easy to find the right music for every moment. On your phone, your computer, your tablet, and more. There are millions of tracks on Spotify. So whether you're working out, partying, or relaxing, the right music is always at your fingertips. Or let Spotify surprise you. You can also browse through the music collections of friends, artists, and celebrities, or create a radio station and just sit back. Soundtrack your life with Spotify. Subscribe or listen for free. Spotify Premium now comes with Hulu on us. Music, podcasts, TV, movies, free for 30 days. Just $9.99 a month after.
Okay, so I got my Twitter me this. From Kate and G.
Shout out to the production manager.
Yeah, to the redhead. We need some dreads. So this is from at STFULOL. I love to know what that actually means.
STFU. Shut the fuck up. LOL.
Yeah. Chris is already kind of a douche. AKA Nick, N-I-K. Stay single until you meet someone who's all about you all the time and not just when they want. I'm going to just assume this means they want someone who is like completely consumed with them and not selfish, or maybe put you off on the back burner until something better comes along. I agree with this in a kind of sort of way. I don't know if you want someone who is all about you all the time. I definitely want someone who has a personality and a life of their own, their own interest. But definitely you don't want someone who is like kind of wishy-washy. You have to wonder and hope that you have all their attention and that they're not just, you know, using you for entertainment purposes. I'm guessing that's what they mean when they say just when they want. So yes, Nick, STFULOL. I definitely agree with this. And I definitely agree with the stay single part. I don't know who said it, where it came from, but single has got this label of being bad. Like one is never enough or something. But I personally am single and have been for a little bit over a year. And I am enjoying this time of my life more than any other part ever. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing to only consider myself for making all these amazing decisions and doing all this good, fun stuff that's coming up in my life. So I would say stay single until you find the person that complements your life. I don't believe people need to be completed, but if a person complements your life, then that's when you should keep them around. But if they're just dead weight, I say get rid of them and anything else they brought in with them.
That was... Actually, I agree with what you said.
That was a really weird tweet me this.
But I think I also kind of disagree with that guy as well.
Is it a man?
Hey.
I guess it could be.
Yeah. Nick, shut the fuck up, LOL. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean.
So for my Twitter me this, this one is from Corey Gregory at Corey G Fitness. The only reason I'm reading this one is because I'm not too sure if I read any of the other ones on previous episodes already. Self-discipline is mastery over one's daily habits. And I think that's relevant, especially as a writer, being in the creative fields, is if you get to some good daily habits of just betting yourself in the smallest ways every single day, over years or weeks or months, that all adds up. Anyone who's being competitive in that field, they're going to be behind you if they're not mastering their daily habits and having that discipline as well. It's one of those things you have to be on top of yourself to create, prove yourself daily. That's a thing I live by, and I really like that one, Caden. Simple.
I like it too. It's very, very true. I read something that said, if you only write when you're inspired, you're never going to write enough.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. I think you should write when you're broken.
Sometimes you just need to start. And that's with anything. Exercise, wow. Yes. Work, whatever you got to do. Sometimes you got to just start and the rest will, it will follow. You can't just be motivated all the time. That's just unrealistic.
I think I really like that though. And I definitely agree. And I think at the very beginning, it's kind of like a little prologue, but it says, why does it seem like I only write when I'm broken? And that's because the words flow. Whether I want to talk about that or not, it still has to come out. And then there's sometimes the best way to get out what you want to say or what you didn't even know you wanted to say. But when you go back and read it, you're like, what was I on? But my Twitter me this, it's a very, very relatable tweet. This guy at Ramesh, R-A-H-M-E-S-H underscore, Ramesh. Listen, I'm saying this because I used to be a former addict of ordering from delivery services. This guy tweeted out, Uber Eats, food, $12. Service fee, $4. Delivery fee, $9. Guess what the total is?
Priceless.
That's a good joke.
What is it?
$260. Bro, that's how I be feeling. Like, where are these other fees coming from that I don't know anything about? Like, I'm paying the driver all of the money out of my dang own bank account. Like, I'm paying $12 for the food. I get the service fee, the cart fee. How does this add up to like $45 if I only ordered a $5 burger, $4 delivery fee, $4 service fee? That's just only like, I don't know how to do math that well, but it's like $13.
I feel like this was a plan all along. They wanted to get us addicted to having food brought to our doors, so that when you get something like that and it's way over what you were expecting to pay, you want it so bad, you're just gonna pay it.
No, that's very true, because when I order delivery, I'm hungry and I want to order everything off the menu. Mm-hmm. But still, how is it that high? But I know how to count money.
But what you're paying for, though, is you're paying for the time to not have to get up and go get something.
Listen, that's too much payment.
No, I agree with those payments, because you're paying for that specific service, right? You're buying the convenience of sitting at home.
You get a cart fee. You get a delivery fee.
What is cart fee?
Why are you taking...
I've never heard of a cart fee.
It's like... car?
Is it just...
Basically, it's like gas or the driving, the gas that you waste from it.
But isn't it just
like
one
that
fee though? Just one delivery fee?
I think not, service fee means you not have to use our service to order your food. You know, of course the food is for the restaurant. And then...
Oh, maybe the service fee comes out of the restaurant along with whatever you buy from that restaurant, and the cart fee is for the delivery.
I've never seen a cart fee in my life.
Yeah. Well, I don't think... Have you ever used the delivery app?
Yeah. It's just usually your food and then plus a delivery fee.
I don't know, because on Postmates, you definitely have to pay like a cart fee.
You know, today marks my 2-month anniversary in Los Angeles, like right now. June 16th.
Congratulations.
And I have never used any kind of delivery service since I've been here, because I've just heard horrible things about pretty much all of them.
Very much so. I remember ranting about it. But like, you know, that's why I don't use it anymore.
That's so funny. I didn't even think about that. But 2 months today, I landed or touched down here.
2 years.
Did I say 2 years?
You said 2 months.
Yeah, 2 months.
It's been 2 months?
2 months.
Okay, like 2 years.
Oh, it's 2 months. Yeah, wait, okay.
No, I got here April 16th. Supposed to be here April 15th. Flight got canceled.
Huh? April 16th?
That's when I got here.
Huh.
I touched down.
That sounds familiar. Yeah,
4:16.
4:16.
Cool.
That's when we started this podcast.
At 4:16 p.m.?
No, a.m. Well, 4:16.
Oh, on that day?
The day that you came here, we dropped our first episode.
Oh, that is so cool.
And now you're on it.
16 a.m.
Whoa. And now you're on it.
Okay, so that would be technically, today would be our 2-month anniversary.
Today would be our 2-month anniversary.
That is so cool.
And we're going to be at the beach.
Happy anniversary,
JL. Congratulations, you guys.
Thank you.
We made it.
We didn't even think about that.
Thank you for bringing it full circle for us.
Oh, no problem. It's good to celebrate the little things, especially when you're doing something so big. Like to have those tent poles along the way.
The what poles?
The small victories. The small victories.
The what poles?
Tent poles.
Tent poles?
Mm-hmm. It's
what
like,
is that?
It's just like when you're married and you celebrate your 1 month anniversary. It's not really an anniversary, but it's just celebrating the fact that we made it this long. So it's just nice to have celebrations along the way for any big thing.
I think Rico brought up on a previous episode that the average person moves out to LA, you only last 3 months.
Wow.
Yes.
So you are just on the cusp of that. So you get past this next month, you're Gucci.
You got it.
I don't think it applies to me, because I used to live in New York City. And we all know if you can conquer New York City, you can conquer anywhere. So send me to like Canada and I'll be fine.
Does a Canadian approve?
I do.
Is it like New York City?
You don't need his approval. You're self-approved.
I know.
We've kind of gotten into psychobabble already. If you don't know what psychobabble is definitely a segment where you get to babble about psychos and you get 1 minute.
I want to take 2 minutes.
Somebody's getting mugged by our production manager. You get to go first because you're our guest of honor. On Kate and G's Go, you'll begin.
Okay, so I talked to Rico about this like a long time ago when he was telling me about the podcast. And I said, if I ever got to meet you guys' podcast, I would talk about customer service.
That's true.
I think it has gone so downhill. And this is not just like customer service in a store. And this is like general, I guess, manners. Basic manners just from human to human have just went like down the drain. People talk to each other like they are just nothing. And I've lived in New York and LA, and I can officially say LA is worse than the Big Apple when it comes to treating people like human beings. And in these stores, I just feel like nobody really cares about the customer. I think when they see us walk through the door, we're like gigantic dollar signs. There's no thank you, there's no please. It's just all like, give me your money and get out of my store as soon as possible. No, you can't use the bathroom. I've even seen signs that say, please don't ask. What if I'm in labor?
That was kind of perfect. But also, I get that. That's why I love Chick-fil-A so much, because they have to, like, it's mandatory for them to say, my pleasure.
And you really do not feel that somebody's behind them, like, with the gun to the head. Like, you better say my pleasure and I'll see you at the
bar. Right, because a lot of them actually just say it.
Natural. I'm sure they looked into hiring people who are people. Right. I think that's really important.
You have to be a people's person. I don't think they just hire any and everybody.
I don't like some of their values.
It wasn't them. It was the previous owner.
But I do love their customer service. I think they're a little crazy, the whole gay wedding thing. But, you know, everybody has the right to do business how they want to. But I respect them. Everyone should take hand from Chick-fil-A.
So on a previous episode, I think Fisher Albrico brought up about people saying, get away from Los Angeles. If you're not from here, go away. And today was a good example of that. So where my mailbox is on Hollywood Boulevard, Hollywood Highland Center, which is a high tourist destination. Even though I know better after all this time being in LA, but going there stresses me out because there's so many people and the streets are just packed. Again, I know this is a high tourist area, but sometimes I just wish they'd just go back to where they came from. Because I'm like, I just want to get to my mailbox. And it's just all these people. And then they're walking and they stop in to look at the stars. It's like, oh my God, people. I got shit to do. I got places to be. Get out of the way. So come from a different way.
I'm not, but you got 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1, go.
So, I was on the phone the other day and I kind of even mentioned this to J.O. today, or technically yesterday, about how people will let their pride kill them before they let someone else kill them. And I know this could definitely go for a not too deep topic, but I'm gonna just psychobabble about it because I think it's really true. And I was mentioning that people, especially guys that are in office, they create these laws because they don't want change and because they don't want to further their knowledge in certain situations or for certain things. I just think that sometimes you have to kill your pride before it kills you. In today's age, again, you will let your pride kill you before someone else has killed you. So get rid of your pride and bury it, because that will be the end of you if you don't kill it.
Happy Pride Month.
Not that pride.
That's what I was thinking when you were going for with.
Oh, that. No. I was talking about people in high places.
Choked to death because she didn't want people to touch her.
Prideful.
What? I don't know if that's the same thing.
No, that's definitely something that I was talking about.
I heard that's a big issue too. It's choking, and also when people have peanut allergies sometimes, that they'll be too embarrassed that they're having a reaction, they're choking. So they'll go to the bathroom and try and fix it themselves because they're embarrassed. Their pride takes over. Like, I shouldn't be choking on this. When if they could just be open about it and take the pride out of it, someone could help them.
Especially,
get saved.
Yeah, that's really weird. It's very strange to see, but it was suggested it was because of her religious reasons. She was like a Muslim woman, and there was men trying to offer her assistance, and she died.
Well, but I think there's still a fine line between whatever you believe in and my life.
Right.
I don't care what I believe in at that moment. If I'm choking, somebody save me if you know how. F religion and F everything else. If it's gonna save my life, I'm all for it. But if not, I got a problem that it might kill me. It's just not right. And therefore, I just think it was really stupid of her. That's what I mean by letting your pride kill you before something or someone else kill you.
Let's talk about birds.
You know what?
Those animals I hate.
Can we? Before we move on, I just want to tell everybody out here how Kayla hates birds. That's all. She just does. You should see her in public with birds.
You
it's
know what?
Great.
If this was Missouri or even somewhere that's not like New York or Los Angeles, I would be fine with the birds. But because of the big city and all the waste and food and all that stuff, the pigeons and even these smaller birds have become more like rats with wings. Mm-hmm. They are dirty creatures. They are bold and disrespectful.
How are they disrespectful?
Oh, like pigeons like walk down the street downtown like humans.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a rat wait on a stoplight in New York. He crossed the street with the rest of us. I'm not lying. But here they are just extra, extra aggressive. And I really think we should do something to get it under control. I am not suggesting we get a bunch of slingshots, even though that might be very effective. But I feel like something needs to happen. Like, if there's a rat running or, like, flying around the sky, people would take cover. They would do something about it. They would spray some kind of pesticide in the air. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, because these things have beaks, we are taking it easy on them.
I mean, you should just see her when we're at a beach and a bird just decides to fly by us.
Okay, I don't even think you can call those gigantic white things birds.
Quote unquote.
Right. It's quote more unquote like birds. A bunch of, you see a white little, what are those birds called? The white ones?
Seagulls?
No.
You see a seagull. I see like a pelican.
Fly, pelican, fly.
That's what I see coming at me. So you're like, oh, it's just a seagull. He's fine. He just wants some bread. I see something that could swallow my face.
They're not that big.
But to me, I have a messed up perception of them, but I've seen what birds can do. I told you guys that they stole a Rice Krispie from me. And I just felt like if he could do that, if he was bold enough to get that close to my body, my mouth, what can't they do? I ask you. What can't they do?
Especially when they gang up.
Right. How long before they blind a child?
Don't support that, JL.
How long before they want your sandwich? How long before they want your ice cream? And they just come and take it.
Oh, I've seen that at the beach. Like, they will, like, you leave a bag of chips, they will come at it, like, five of them strong, and they'll, like, fly around, and then they'll take it from you.
It's like harassing you, because you'll drop it, like, ah, well, it's birds. I don't know if you guys ever heard of Tim Bador. But he was on the Bob and Tom radio show. And he talked about the animal conspiracy a lot. And I'm not a conspiracist person. I'm not that person. But I really feel like it's one of those things we're going to wish we had looked into a little bit sooner.
Gosh. With that being
said. That could have been you're not too deep right there.
Right. Honestly, with that being said, I think it's time to move into a little segment we like to call Not Too Deep.
Period.
If you do not know what not too deep means, it is not a sexual innuendo unless you want it to be. Anyway, not too deep is where we take a minute and we get as deep as possible. Yes, I realize that sounds very sexual. As the guest of honor, you don't want to go first? So
love for you to lead by example.
We will lead by example and have JL go first.
In this house, we figured out we have aliens living among us.
Wow.
And earlier today, Donald Trump, there was a news article. And I guess the Navy has been seeing a lot of UFO sightings. So they're going to be introducing new protocols to basically record and document these more. And Donald Trump, being Donald Trump, he said, you know what, I read the report, but I don't believe it particularly. And it's like, this is the Navy. This is a well-funded organization with great intelligence. They're not saying that there's like aliens per se, but they're finding these flying objects that aren't your typical planes, and they're like not having like, you know, same heat sources or energy sources. And it just shows that aliens are among us. And we have found two of them in our house, maybe three. Mm-hmm. But Donald Trump doesn't believe it, so it's not real. Three? Fake news.
Okay, you know what? We're going to talk about something that I've actually been dealing with for the last few days. Do I have to go?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to talk about uncertainty.
Ooh.
Because it is something that, like, plagues me every once in a while. Now, I'm a woman who likes to prepare. I like to have things very set up and in order. I like to know what's going to happen next. I want to know how far we're going to be walking. Do we get where we're going? I need to know. But sometimes I get uncertain. And it rocks me, like, to my core, like, because it's something I'm so unfamiliar with. I'm the kind of person who has, like, an extra pair of clothes all the time, extra shoes, just in case something goes wrong. But every once in a while, I get uncertain about, like, my path and my journey and what's going to be next for me. But I think if we just make sure we keep our spirit of discernment, just knowing that everything is not going to be for you, everybody is not going to be for you, then you can get through those rough patches. Just follow your heart and take your brain with you.
Damn.
Phew.
Yeah, I got time still.
You rocked my world.
That just rocked my world.
No matter what, you got to strut. That's
there we go.
Yeah.
Cherry on top.
These are great sound bites, people.
That's going to be the words before I die. Whoever's holding me at my bedside, they're going to be like, what do you want to say? And I'm going to be like, no matter what, you got to strut. I was like my kid or my grandkid.
I think I need to get that on a t-shirt. Yeah. I would definitely wear that at your funeral.
The Clumps movie.
Yeah, I remember, but I would definitely wear that at your funeral.
I think that's like the greatest thing ever. Fake it till you make it.
Fake it till you make it.
Strut it.
Fake it till you make it. That's
so very interesting. You're not too deep.
Those are some deep words right there. Fake it till you make it. Speaking of faking it until you make it, I was watching the movie Love, Simon today. And with it being Pride Month, when we're recording this, I think that it is definitely important to spread the message of you are who you are. Take your time, be who you are. But other people, it's not okay for you to out other people. But there was one line in the movie that really rocked me when it was said, which is, what if the world doesn't like you? This is what the mom said to the son. But here's the question. What the fuck if? It's not for them to like you. It's for you to like you, for you to accept who you are. Accept who you are. Don't care about what other people think or what other people feel that they have the right to say or anything else of that nature. You are who you are no matter what. And no matter what, you've got to strut. So what if they don't like you?
Well, our last segment is your shout outs. Is anyone you want to shout out? Shout them out. Or no one?
Oh, I mean,
there is no one I want to shout out. And not because there's not people who deserve to be shouted out. I just feel like at this time in my life, there is no one necessary to mention at this point. But you know what? I'll shout out me because I'm awesome.
Boom. I'll co-sign that.
And, to Devin, he gave us a pretty good week. Or you guys a pretty good week. He's a nice guy. I don't know his Instagram name.
Oh, I'll give it to you.
Yeah, it's like Blue Jeans or something.
Yeah. So shout out Devin.
Right, Devin from Oakland. Well, he's from New York, but he's living in Oakland right now. So we had a really good time with him last week on the beach, and he went home today. So that's something cool. Yeah.
Shout out to that guy, bro.
Actually, so posted that one photo today from Runyon Canyon, and he commented on it. And what did I say here? Oh. It was actually very nice.
Light soul blue.
So I was like, he's like, nice. Great pick. I was like, safe travels. House is going to miss you for sure, brother. And he says, I'm going to miss you and the crew, bro. Best believe this isn't the end. Here's to sooner than later. Just a good guy. Just a good guy.
I think he like made everybody laugh. I have some videos that I deleted that I wasn't proud of. That we made just some private conversations between the two of us. He'll never see them. You'll never see them. But they lived.
Damn. We need to hack her phone. Recently deleted.
Oh, the other ones that you deleted that you didn't want any other.
Yeah, no, they were they're dead.
That was
But you know, here's the drugs.
here.
Don't do them, but do them.
Here's the drugs. Don't do them. I don't know if I follow him.
Enjoy responsibly.
Yeah, I co-signed that as well. I always believe that people should do drugs. You know, responsibly, of course.
People do ibuprofen all day long, so why not do some stuff that people don't say is right? I feel like people
can actually open up your mind and experience new things.
They'll say, like, oh, marijuana, it will alter, you know, your personality, which is why it's illegal. It can make you, like, incoherent and all that good stuff. But if you take too many aspirin, you might stumble. If you take too many of those ibuprofen, your blood might get pretty thin, and I think that will definitely alter your thinking. So,
Who is it? Cat Williams, I think it was, but he's like, you have too many Tylenols. That could be your last headache.
Right. It will be your last headache. So we take drugs all the time, but there's just certain drugs that people say we shouldn't take because of whatever reason.
True. This is hilarious, by the way. There's something you posted on your story. It's really funny. It was a tweet.
Oh, the AirPods
the
one?
The AirPods one, yeah.
I should have spent my Twitter meme this.
Played basketball against a guy with AirPods on the Apple Watch on. He answered a phone call mid-game and hit a three in my face while talking about the girl he was with the night before. I never felt so humiliated in my life. That's just funny.
Yes, on that note, talking about basketball, my shout-out will be to Anthony Davis. As a Laker fan, we just got one of the best players in the league. Very exciting day because I've always, when I moved out to LA, how the team was in kind of a rebuilding mode, I said, you know what, this team is going to be a reflection of my life in LA. The first season, we had a couple of rookies. It wasn't the best season. This past season, we got LeBron James, who is obviously one of the greatest of all time. And then he got injured, so it was kind of a rocky up and down season. And now today, we got one of the best players in the league to match up with him. So it's going to be a great run. The only bad thing is ticket prices are going to go up, so I better start saving now. But shout out to the brow, Anthony Davis, LA baby, for getting that chip. As Drake would say, get the chip with the dip.
Chip with the dip. How about it? You're
all humped up.
Yes.
I don't know how much of that basketball talk that I heard just now, but I heard it. I'm excited for it because I know who Anthony Davis and LeBron James is.
I don't know.
I may not watch every game, but I'm definitely going to watch that final game.
I watched the game the other night, and I don't watch sports ever. I think it's more fun to play sports, but I really got into the spirit of things with all the other people around me.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I did.
That was good.
I wanted the team that was wearing black to win because I like black. They did not. Anyways, I did get into the spirit of the game. I personally love volleyball. That's it. What's happening?
Carlos being Carlos.
He was smiling. He wasn't serious.
I don't give a fuck. I feel like we talked about a lot of writing, but I didn't realize how much of my writing is not about me.
Shout out to Devin. Shout out to JL. Shout out to Kaden G. Shout out to everybody that made this podcast possible, and especially have made a second season such a fiery fucking season. It's been amazing. Third season.
Did you really shout out Devin and not me?
I said everybody. He was just here.
I'm here now.
Can you let me finish my shout outs? Maybe you were in the lineup. Maybe. Did you ever think about that?
I want to be 17.
She's included me, everybody.
Shout out to everybody that made this third season so fiery. With the grease all the way from Canada. With every guest, especially the one that we have today on this episode, Miss Kayla Cat. She's one of the most amazing people. But before I go any further, you know what I'm about to say. You've heard me say it over like five podcasts by now. June 19th, everybody. On the Disney Channel, there is a hit brand new TV show that stars four amazing freaking actors. Ramon Reed, Kaylin Heyman, Susie Barrett, and Toby Winham. On the show called Just Roll With It. If you don't know what it is, go look it up. Go watch it, because they released the preview on June 14th. And you might, if you keep watching, you might catch your boy's face in it every now and then. Or a lot. You should definitely go and watch it. These kids and these people, they've been working relentless for like 5 months now. So we just wrapped up the season. Should definitely go watch it. Again, hats off to you, Mr. J.O. Happy second month anniversary on this podcast. Thanks for believing in me and the podcast. And now it's this. Only way to get to the top is by climbing the ladder. It's supposed to be inspirational, but don't know how far we got to the top. Anyway, keep going. That's all I'm saying. Thanks. With that being said, it's time for the wrap up. Last thing. Welcome to Pride Month. Wrap it up. Also, this podcast is going all the way to New York City for Pride. Go follow us on all of our social medias over on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at Self-Approved PD, and even our website, www.selfapprovedpd.com. If you don't know how to spell it, it's SELFAPPROVED. If you need to listen to this podcast on anything else, you should definitely listen to it on the Podcoin. Use our promo code SELFAPPROVE and get 300 free Podcoins before you even get started. I think I might have said everything. Did I?
Good enough.
Good enough. This podcast comes out every Tuesday at 4:16 a.m. With that being said, while buffering, binge on what makes you happy, find your grace and style. Remember, you deserve a drink and that you're official by your own approval because... 1, 2, 3. I got this frown. Your boy's out. Bye-bye.
We're out.